asistentes sociales, médico y también registro civil y también embajada.
Remanentes de un doloroso genocidio que se prolonga hasta hoy. Manuel Arismendi, Hispan TV.
Aquí pensaban seguir ganando el 100% con casas de apartamentos y echar al pueblo a sufrir y seguir de modo cruel contra el pueblo conspirando para seguirlo explotando. Y en eso llegó Fidel y se acabó la diversión. Llegó el comandante y mandó a parar. Y se acabó la diversión. Llegó el comandante y mandó a parar.
El presidente cubano Miguel Díaz-Canel cumple el viernes su primer año de gestión al frente del gobierno de la isla caribeña, marcado por aciertos y dificultades.
Hace exactamente un año, esta imagen selló la histórica transición generacional del gobierno en Cuba. 12 meses después de su elección, el presidente Miguel Díaz-Canel ha establecido un nuevo estilo de gobierno en medio de una situación económica compleja debido a las sanciones más severas de los Estados Unidos, restricciones financieras y la crisis actual en Venezuela, el principal aliado de la nación caribeña.
Díaz-Canel asumió la revolución que le elevó, ¿no? Fidel a todos nosotros. Yo pienso que él, imagínate, está trabajando según sus posibilidades, según los recursos que tenemos. Sabemos que somos un país bloqueado y yo pienso que por lo menos se ha visto trabajando positivamente en varios sectores.
Ahora creo que va en buen camino, ha querido con todas sus cosas poco a poco y ha querido mejorar el país. Ha querido sustituir exportaciones por las importaciones mismas de nosotros, ha querido realzar esto de poco a poco y ha sido un año bastante difícil, pero bueno, hasta ahora desde mi punto de vista como joven creo que va por buen camino.
Realmente lo considero exitoso, exitoso, porque ha seguido la línea del comandante y de la revolución como tal.
Para este analista cubano, el mandatario ha enfrentado un año complejo debido al difícil contexto económico doméstico y el adverso panorama internacional marcado por la agresividad de Washington contra la isla. No obstante, el jefe de Estado ha liderado el país con varios aciertos.
En el plano político, los cambios han sido muchos. Hay una nueva constitución, hay una apertura del espacio público con la apertura de internet, en los datos móviles, con la insistencia del presidente en utilizar los mecanismos electrónicos para la gobernanza. Es decir, tenemos el país ha continuado cambiando y esos cambios han ido en la dirección, aunque quizás no suficientemente, pero en la dirección que ha cambiado la sociedad cubana.
Incrementar la eficiencia económica ha sido su prioridad en medio de un escenario tenso en que los envíos de petróleo desde Caracas han disminuido sustancialmente y las exportaciones no han alcanzado sus ingresos proyectados.
Los problemas están básicamente en que no se ha logrado articular todo lo que implica la reforma económica, todo lo que implica la actualización del modelo económico cubano. Eso todavía está pendiente. Y no ha avanzado con la celeridad que debió avanzar.
Potenciar sectores claves como el turismo, la biotecnología, energías renovables, infraestructura y servicios médicos son las prioridades económicas del gobierno de Miguel Díaz-Canel en los próximos años. Raimundo Urrechaga, Hispan TV.
Y concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de RTN, de Telesur, de Radio de Naciones Unidas, del Informativo Farco, de Hispan TV y del diario La Jornada. A nombre de Norma Martínez se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
In my eyes, indisposed, in disguise,
eyes no one knows. Hides the face, lies the snake, and the sun in my disgrace. Boiling heat, summer stench, neath the black the sky looks dead. Call my name through the cream, and I'll hear you scream again. Black old sun, won't you come to wash away the rain? Black old sun, won't you come, won't you come?
Start a ring, cold and damp, steal the warm wind tight frame. Times have come for honest men, and sometimes far too long for snakes. In my shoes, a walk in sleep, and my youth, I pray to keep.
And next up on Free Radio's stream at freakradio.org, it's the Bathrobe Spears Broadsides May 2nd, 2019 show. This one's going to be largely taken up with the aftermath of the court last Monday, and the ongoing attack on the Ross camp that will culminate tomorrow at 10 o'clock, or at least that's when the deadline is. Police have a nasty habit of threatening to come and then coming a bit later after all the activists and the public have dispersed, those who might want to witness or even join those being forcibly destroying, well, their homes being forcibly destroyed, their tents and their property. Or let's put it this way, they're being forced to move, but they can't carry their stuff, and there isn't enough city-funded storage to go to take it, so they're stuck without any place to, any way to move it. And they're also in a situation, for many of them, with no place to move it to. So that's going to be happening tomorrow, sometime at or after 10 o'clock in the morning, unless the police come early, which is always a possibility as well, since the restraining order has been lifted. And the city manager has shown a willingness to sort of make decrees as to what should be done and do it as he sees fit. Although the city council has voted the standard operating procedure camp abatement processes that the city is supposedly committed to using, which don't involve finding adequate shelter for people whose camps they are destroying. And suffer a little with the folks who are going to suffer more than you tomorrow morning.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
Let's begin with the aftermath of the TRO dissolution, which happened on Monday in the court of Edward Davila over in San Jose. A flyer about it, which I distributed yesterday at the Ross Camp. Community salutes the Ross Camp Rough Riders. This was at a time when there was some possibility that Ross Camp folks would be moving some of them, a small group of them perhaps, or maybe a larger group, to another campground quite publicly, although with a certain amount of suddenness, to set up a second campground and holding together as a group, some of them being the plaintiffs in this lawsuit, which goes on. Even though the temporary restraining order banning the city from killing the Ross camp has been lifted, so the city can now move ahead to destroy the Ross camp as it intends to do tomorrow at 10, there is still a lawsuit which is going to be going to court for damages, claiming civil rights violations and various kinds of injuries and compensation required for the injuries caused against folks who are being forced away from the Ross camp. Judge Davila found, and I think wrongly found, and pretty evidently wrongly found, if the standard for immediate harm is no place to go and a threat for vulnerable women to be outside in a much less safe place than they are at the Ross camp, particularly when the city is telling stories, as a story spinner Susie O'Hara has been doing for several years at City Council and being paid rather well to do that, that there actually is alternate shelter for the folks at the Ross camp. There is some offered shelter for some of them, most notably and most notoriously, the Barbed Wire Boneyard 1220 River Street Campground, which has, I think it housed 60 tents or 50 tents last year when it was opened in order to clear another campground, the San Lorenzo campground, which had, again, twice as many people. And it was the city's attempt to say, see, everything's okay. We're giving you shelter over here. Actually, it's kind of a bait and switch kind of deal where they weren't giving shelter. They were giving partial shelter to a fewer number of people. San Lorenzo campground's shelter area or campground area 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, which was set up, happened after the city dispersed the survival sleepers at City Hall in 2017 under the very liberal Chief Andy Mills. And then Mills, who then claimed he wasn't going to be giving tickets under the sleeping ban, significantly increased with his new Parks and Rec Rangers squad, because they were now under his command, tickets for being in a closed area, being in a park after dark, blocking the sidewalk, and illegal lodging. This ended the two-year-long Freedom Sleepers, which became the Survival Sleepers, and at City Hall, the protest that went on initially on a weekly basis every Tuesday, and then on a nightly basis when the shelter let out at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, I should say the winter shelter, the Homeless Lack of Services Center wasn't involved in the 2016-2017 winter shelter. Folks then began moving to the post office area along the fence which was put in to separate the august post office building from the dirty, filthy, nearby presence of the homeless folks. Around this time, there was a hepatitis A epidemic down in San Diego that prompted them to set up an actual large tent shelter for people. And also Mills, noticing the police chief, noticing more and more people appearing at the downtown areas and visible places, and maybe trying to duplicate in some way what he had done up in Eureka, which is there under threat of a lawsuit, to set up a area where people could sleep. It was kind of like it was a parking lot or some such thing, in lieu of a camp, which there had been a lawsuit to stop him from depopulating that camp. The parking lot served for about 6 months, and the folks who he had supposedly given this compassionate shelter to all somehow disappeared, and it's not really clear what happened to them. When I asked him questions about it subsequently, he had no clear answers. He then directed people to go to the San Lorenzo benchlands. This was in the fall of 2017, and they went there. Well, many had already gone there anyway, so were sleeping along the levee and in the benchlands, and set up their own campground. Parks and Rec stopped enforcing the being in a closed area stuff, the stuff that they then began increasingly to enforce some months later. and this campground lasted all winter. Then, in order to depopulate it and appear to be compassionate, the authorities under Susie O'Hara and like city bureaucrats moved, as I said, a smaller number of these folks to the River Street campground, the Boneyard Barbed Wire campground, which still has barbed wire around it, although there is one little bit of barbed wire that has been taken down. You can see it kind of been curled up, and maybe that's a sort of a precursor of the future. Maybe they intend to remove the barbed wire to make it at least look less like the concentration camp that many feel it is, the sort of open-air jail that many feel it is, given the very severe restrictions on visitors, on walking in and out, and so forth. And actually, it'll be this time it'll be run much more repressively by the Salvation Army, which is going to be wanding you or searching you coming in and out, and has a much harsher set of rules. Or I think, I don't have the actual rules in front of me, but my understanding from talking to some activists who've read the rules and some who've been there, not the activists, but some of the individuals who've been at the previous Boneyard campground, the River Street campground as it's called, it's a step down or a little tighter around the neck and the genitalia than the previous campground. But after all, you can't be too careful with these dangerous homeless people. Hanging from the history, and you know me about history, if you're a regular listener to my show or read my flyers, I tend to get lost often in the history. I find it interesting, important, useful way of viewing the present from a historical perspective. So kind of generate lots of mists and opportunities for getting lost in the byways and the side tracks and the so forth. After O'Hara, the assistant city manager, and Tina Scholl, another assistant city manager, had continued to run their phony rap about there being adequate shelter, even though they were spending huge amounts of money on this River Street campground. I think it was $90,000 a month, though they had dropped to $75,000. There were different estimates. That would be $2,000 per person per month, which could have been enough to, put people up in rather much more comfortable indoor accommodations. But, that would only encourage them, like ants, roaches, and other vermin, to come to Santa Cruz, according to, their pals on the Discus Sentinel's comment website or the Take Back Santa Cruz-ish type Facebook comments you can see if you don't look very far around on the Internet. Promises. You got lots of promises about an interim transitional camping shelter or shelter area, which didn't appear in the summer of 2018. And so they extended this expensive campground, the River Street Campground, until August, and still didn't appear in spite of the many promises of O'Hara and Scholl. And so they extended it until until April of this year. But lo and behold, in October, they decided, no, we can't do that. So they cut it off and reduced the winter shelter from what it had been the year before, making shelter for less people. And people then began going to the Ross area, sometimes directed, actually on a number of occasions, by Andy Mills, the police chief. Again, understandably, police like to see homeless in one area concentrated. They prefer that than in the neighborhoods. So they don't keep getting called, there's a stranger in my neighborhood with a tent, that sort of thing. As though that, were the end of the world and indicate, it's going to ruin the property values and terrorize the children and so forth. And there they were in the Ross camp and growing, and that went on for about 6 months. And so they suddenly decided, well, we got to get rid of these people. March 15th, out they should go. Well, they were nervous about a court decision that happened last September, the Boise versus Martin decision. And that decision had said something to the effect of, you can't ticket those people for camping offenses unless you've got an actual place for them to go into. Now, Attorney Anthony Prince says indoor shelter. Our city has said, no, you can have outdoor shelter too. But in fact, what the city, Santa Cruz, has always ended up doing is providing no shelter for the overwhelming majority of homeless people outside. Nonetheless, the Boise versus Martin decision has made many cities nervous, Santa Cruz among them. And Chief Mills has made it a point to keep saying, well, I'm not giving as many camping tickets as I used to. In fact, far less. And that's true. There are a few that are still being given, though. But what he is doing, and what his Parks and Rec Rangers are doing, or you could say Tony Elliott, the new Parks and Rec boss, as of about 6 months ago, is doing, as well as keeping the Loudoun-Nelson bathrooms locked to those not in the programs, and City Hall bathrooms locked to people during the day, is they are giving more and more closed area citations, meaning if you fall asleep in a park after dark, that's a crime. If you're in a closed area that, like of the Poganip, which is the whole Poganip at night, that's a crime. And they also can give you a stay-away order at the same time without even taking you to court under the novel Santa Cruz law passed by the reactionaries under previous mayor David Chirazes. It's true that some of these laws are being researched by, God help us, the Martin Bernal staff, which includes the same beloved Tina Shul and Susie O'Hara. Oh, I'm not quite sure who's actually assigned to review them. I guess the city attorney's office is going to be looking into this, too. 2 or 3 months ago, Drew Glover, one of the council members, made a successful motion that those matters, by a 4-3 vote at the city council, a whole series of ordinances would be looked at to see their impact on the homeless. One of them being the closed area ordinance that the Parks and Rec and the police department enforce so freely, so frequently, and so selectively against homeless people. Not assuming it gets put on the agenda, as it should be, because it's being properly situated on the agenda 2 weeks before the next city council meeting, as is supposedly required by the, I don't know, whether it's unwritten tradition or latest edicts from Bernal and Watkins, he's our mayor, he's our city manager, or stuff I never knew about. I talked to Micah Posner, a former city council member, and he said it's always been an uncertain process of when the agenda is formulated. The agenda of a city council meeting is usually formulated, I had thought it was on the Wednesday before the Tuesday city council meeting. That was my understanding. Posner said, well, yeah, usually, but it can be done way before that. Usually that's about the last time. So I'm not sure that there's any written policy about this, but that has been used as an excuse to keep Glover's proposals, among them most notoriously transitional encampments, and the idea that there can be private agencies, private nonprofits, if you will, that, like Food Not Bombs, like the Association of Faith Communities, like Brent Adams' Sanctuary Village or Warming Center, that can actually set up transitional campgrounds of different kinds without elaborately having to go through the city council, which can be a deadly and probably will be deadly once the council, well, it probably is deadly now, given it's a little unclear how deadly it is now. Because we have the swing vote is, of course, Justin Cummings, who we had thought was elected to further rent control and restore homeless rights and keep police spending within bounds and stop racial profiling. Both he and Glover, of course, are people of color, as the fashionable phrase has it. Black, as we used to say. Has turned tail on a number of very important issues like rent control and the Ross Camp, which affects thousands of people in the city, at least the rent control situation, and just eviction protection. The rent freeze issue, which was came up in January, was initially voted, and then was when Cummings ran the other way, or ducked the other way, or moved the other way, it was deep sixth, and now we have the increasingly repressive situation of the ongoing landlord profiteering that's driving away lower-income people and working people from the city. I don't have any stats on that, but I believe that is the case. In any case, coming up in 2 weeks at the next city council meeting, which is not going to be the 7th, as some may think, 7th of May, next Tuesday. It's going to be the Tuesday after next, the 14th, because the month of April, I think it had 5 Tuesdays, and the city council meets on the 2nd and 4th Tuesday, so the 5th Tuesday didn't count, and we go back into the 2nd and 4th Tuesdays of May, which are the 14th and the 28th. all you knuckleheads who like to go to city council meetings, or go to them whether you like to or not. That's one of the things I tend to do, at least in part, and read my little two-minute speech, giving it out to people in the aisles, and making a few audio recordings, which I then play on this program. This is about the court case that came up. I know, that was about 20 minutes ago. I began this very wandering monologue history. And maybe it's given you a sense of what's happened in the last year or two around this issue. But the Roskamp plaintiffs have been suing the city to stop them from closing the Roskamp, and then if they do, getting damages from them for this unconstitutional closure, forcing people into unsafe situations and violating the Ninth Circuit Court's Boise versus Martin decision, something which, unfortunately, federal judge Edward Davila did not agree with, at least as far as maintaining the TRO, although he will be the judge. Actually, he won't be the judge who oversees the trial as far as being the decider of fact. A judge can be both the decider of law and the decider of fact. That is to say, you just have a trial before a judge with no jury. But instead, Anthony Prince has declared he will be taking this case before a jury. So that it's that matter, at least the guilty or not guilty verdict, and the city is the one that will be in the docket, will be taken out of the hands of Judge Davila. Anyway, what I wrote about this whole thing, and I haven't yet really talked about the Monday case, and I don't know how much I'm going to do it today. I've got a lot of Roskamp stuff to play, and I'd rather do that than go through these arcane legal hoops that are sort of fun for middle-class people to look at and wonder at and second-guess and argue about. And I'm one of those middle-class people, by the way, however occasionally rough or growly my rhetoric may sound. It's the people in the camp and what's going on out there, people who are about to be dispersed tomorrow, that are really the issue. And they're the issue in the court case, too. Anyway, the flyer I wrote reads, "Community salutes the Roskamp Rough Riders." And I will read that after this brief musical break.
So that's the bottom line. After nearly 2 years of investigation, the special counsel did not find that the Trump campaign or other Americans colluded in those efforts. And I will now have a few questions.
Hi. Hello. Over here. Thank you for taking our questions, Attorney General Barr. Roseanne, many are concerned that you have whitewashed this report in an effort to protect the president. Your response?
The very prosecutorial function and all our powers as prosecutors, including the power to convene grand jury.
Little clown, crying no collusion. We've been tricked, and it's gone too far. We ain't down with the Constitution. That's why Trump handpicked. Bill Barr, over here. Bill Barr.
Bill Barr.
Bill Barr.
Hey, Bill.
Roseanne. Why does he just keep saying no obstruction? He must be under Donald's spell. He's a shiesty hypocrite. You might say he's full of shit, just like someone else I know.
Good morning, Kel.
First of all, the investigation by Mr. Mueller...
Okay, I just said good morning.
...failed to conclude that the president has committed a crime.
Wow, that's great. Your husband hates you. Gotta go. Now it's no wonder Donald crapped his diaper the day he heard they hired Bob. Since he really did obstruct, he said, oh my God, I'm fucked. Then he called Bill Barr and offered him the job. What they declare, he's just repeating, like in that phony summary. He should play fair, but he's misleading. He's shadier than Sarah Huckabee. Oh, hey girl, I didn't see you there.
The big question here was whether or not the Trump campaign colluded with Russia. They didn't.
This sure is a great read, though. far-off places, Russian hackers, magic spells, all Manafort. Why, look, it even questions your own credibility, stating you lied multiple times to the American public about the firing of James Comey.
Actually, if you look at what I said the slip of the tongue was in using the word countless.
Okay.
But there were a number of FBI...
Look, there goes Sarah popping off like always, the apple of her daddy's eye, with a manner that's high-strung and a slight slip of the tongue, which is how to speak for calculated lie. Damn, this is so redacted. What's in volume H that I can't see? Hookers, but it's not till volume P. Mr. Giugniazzi, Republicans and Democrats alike are appalled that the president would take help of any kind from a hostile foreign source.
Stop the bull. Stop this pious act that you weren't digging, trying to dig up dirt on people, putting dirt out on people.
Who, me?
There's nothing wrong with taking information from Russians.
There's nothing wrong with taking information from Russians.
It depends on where it came from.
It came from Russians.
And does the information turn out to be false?
I don't know. I don't work here.
Oh, yes, you do.
Excuse me. I have to do a costume change.
There's Jerry Nadler with a fat subpoena for White House counsel Don McGahn. Little Junior pushed his luck. Daddy's thankful he's a schmuck. And his dumbass foiled their own master plan. Oh, look, you guys, Nancy Pelosi. Will she impeach no matter what? They call him blind. He calls them nosy. And Jared Kushner's heads up his own bile bar and wine. Look, so many indiscretions. Drink. Roseanne.
Page 12.
Will Mueller talk?
Hey, Mayor Pete, I think you're cute.
No way.
Mike. Mitch, please.
I missed a set.
Oh,
I thought this chapter would be funnier.
Look at all this
hill,
he's fun for an audience of one.
And he really is incredible.
For real though, he's incredible.
No, really, he's not credible.
So that's the bottom line.
Okay.
And that's the latest Randy Rainbow parody song, or song parody, Barr. About, of course, Attorney General William Barr, who is accused of soft peddling and misrepresenting the Mueller report. Of course, my reaction to all this stuff is, further, if you stick to the real issues, which have to do with massive military and police establishment in the country that eats up massive amounts of money and civil liberties, and it threatens to not just destroy the peace of the world, it has destroyed the peace of the world. I think we have more armaments, or more expenditures on armaments and military than what the next nine countries in the world. Attempting to portray Russia as this great menace, which has an economy some have described the size of Italy, is based upon the need for military and military contractors to have an enemy, and have politicians to have an enemy, and there to be an ongoing war, because the war against terror is sort of become old hat. I mean, it's been, a lot of money was expended on it, a lot of bombings have happened, civilians have been murdered all over the world by U.S. and, of course, don't forget those wonderful jihadis, no question about that. But Democrats and Republicans are actually spending much time or energy seriously addressing or opposing those issues. And we've all seen this for decades. Even the Green New Deal and the focus on the climate catastrophe doesn't really involve massively dismantling the military. And even the great sheepdog Bernie Sanders, whose job it seems to be is to steer everybody back into the Democratic Party, with liberal and leftist talk, and then I'll support Hillary or whoever the Hillary clone, you know, Biden, whoever it's going to be, is in 2020. And you can see this kind of mentality even at a local level around homeless folks. There are three council members who are better on homeless issues than other council members have been for the last decade or so. And some of them, one of them anyway, is pretty outspoken. That's Drew Glover. But even he, for example, was afraid to put on the agenda, to ask there be a vote on agendizing items that Mayor Watkins has specifically and repeatedly refused to put on the agenda, putting on instead these phony pseudo-housing, pseudo-homeless aid items cooked up by O'Hara and Scholl that really involve the dispersal and destruction of existing homeless, I don't want to say housing, but tents and camps, which you might say, well, people shouldn't have to live like that. And you're right, they shouldn't. But the fact is, if that's the only option they have, then to destroy it without providing other options is a form of true hypocrisy, if you're talking about cruel hypocrisy, too. If you're talking about addressing those issues in a humanitarian way. It's like the humanitarian interventions in Libya and Syria that have killed and created millions of refugees. They've created millions of refugees. They've killed hundreds of thousands of people. And they've killed tens of thousands of civilians. My figures may be a little shaky, but I don't think they're that far off. Anyway, here's the flyer that I said I would read to you, and I will. Again, as I said, I put it out yesterday. And it reads, Community Salutes the Ross Camp Rough Riders. In the face of personal attacks by City Hatchet Man, that's City Attorney, Reed Galagly, and Assistant City Manager Story Spinners Susie O'Hara, Ross Camp defenders fought back Monday in federal court. They made a strong record for a likely appeal of a biased and baseless decision by federal judge Edward Davila. The TRO held the police at bay for a week. That's the temporary restraining order. But the camp now faces a 9 a.m. and actually apparently it's a 10 a.m. My apologies. Friday eviction date. California Homeless Union attorney and activist Anthony Prince, that's the attorney who argued for the plaintiffs. He actually came in originally as sort of the general counsel for the California Homeless Union with the theory that homeless plaintiffs arguing their own case would be given more leeway by the judge, but he ended up essentially doing all the arguing. Fought to retain in place the temporary restraining order that protected Ross Camp from demolition by City Manager Martine Bernal's bulldozer of bullshit, as I see it. The standards to keep the TRO in place were imminent and irredeemable harm, favorable balance of equities, and likelihood of success. Favorable balance of equities means if you consider the harm on one side versus the harm on the other, then you weigh it so that there's the folks who are wanting to keep the camp open have to prove it in order to stop the city from dissolving the temporary restraining order and doing what they want. Davila ran roughshod over the Ross residents, that's the judge, by ignoring the elephant in the room, the fact that the city, by its own testimony, had no adequate and accessible alternate shelter for all of those in the camp. Anthony Prince, the attorney for the plaintiffs, showed a variety of photos taken after last Sunday's camp cleanup. He tellingly confronted Fire Chief Haddock, I don't want to accuse him of being a fishy guy, dismissing one after another of the hazards that Haddock had sworn required eliminating the camp. Witnesses testify that Haddock and O'Hara had agreed to provide assistance for earlier cleanups that never materialized. Not the cleanups, but the assistance. O'Hara's claim of adequate and accessible shelter for displaced residents was contradicted by the facts out of her own mouth. She claimed the Paul Lee Loft had only one vacancy, the Rebelli Family Shelter none, the VFW Winter Sanctuary 25 out of a capacity of 60, the Laurel Street Shelter 5, and the South County Salvation Army 5. Now, if we add all those up, that's 25, 30, 35, 36, And how many people are out at Ross? Hundreds. What are you talking about, Susie? Is my response. Now, when I talked to Susie today out at Ross, I was out there today doing some tabling, getting people to sign up so that wherever they happen to be driven to tomorrow, they might, some of them, be able to get back in touch. And if we go to court again, get some kind of compensation, it'll be years down the road, of course, for their losses at this camp, because they can't possibly carry their stuff elsewhere. And given the lack of shelter or an elsewhere to go to. And their camp is being destroyed tomorrow at 10 a.m. or soon thereafter. But what O'Hara told me today was suddenly there is a greater number of vacancies because in the last few months, less and less people have been using the winter shelter at the VFW Winter Sanctuary, which would be on 7th Avenue, and the Laurel Street Shelter, which opened up some months later, a few months ago, I guess. I'm able to find the handout that Susie O'Hara was giving out at a table up at the Ross Camp removal area earlier today, but she did tell me that the number of spaces, I believe, was like 30 or 40 in both Laurel and the VFW place. And I could be wrong on one of those, but that's significantly much more than her testimony of Monday in court 4 days ago, 3 days ago. So she is contradicting herself, which was also the case in, she was contradicted in court, at least by the testimony of a guy named Serge, who has been studying the shelter situation. I think he works at the, either he works for the Homeless Lack of Services Center, or he works in conjunction with different service providers. I'm a little unclear on that. He gave a very specific itemizing of the very limited shelter that was available. And it stood in rather sharp contrast to Susie O'Hara's claims, but the judge preferred to believe her. My flyer continues, Ross Camp is estimated to have 150 to 300 residents. The Benchlands campground, which is now closed, was slated to close May 1st. The 1220 River Street campground had 60 tent spaces before, that is to say, last year. Now O'Hara claims there are 80. I drove by there this morning and saw, I think it was somewhere less than 10 small one-person tents set up, the same kind of tents which if you walked by the Benchlands in the last week you would have seen in the Benchlands area right below the courthouse. Also claim deficiencies will be made up with five-day motel vouchers. Again, how long is all this going to last compared to the longevity of the Ross Camp if it were to be cleaned up by the campers themselves, as they agreed to do with the help of the city, as they also agreed to do, but then, according to the campers, welched on? The answer would be that Ross Camp would probably last considerably longer. It would be cheaper. It would give the city time to set up transitional campgrounds. They have no interest in doing that, though. The city camper wreckers, I think my flyer continues, ignored the fact that cramming Ross Camp refugees into the highly limited shelter space would mean shoving or walling out current homeless people and others outside of Ross Camp, of whom there are between 1,000 and 2,000 in Santa Cruz. Ross Camp advocates in court offered to further clean up the camp in conjunction with the city, as I mentioned before, help to clear up the congestion in the camp by working with the city in setting up other safe encampments that would draw off some of the excess and crowded, alleviate the crowded conditions at Ross Camp, and address other problems in Ross Camp as they arose. In response, City Attorney Galagly smeared council member Drew Glover as a drug lover. Repeatedly, yeah, those were the words he used, drug lover. They said, well, your name in high school, you spelled D-R-U, and your last name is Glover. So if you add Drew and Glover together, that's drug lover, isn't it, Mr. Council Member, is what the city attorney said in court. in live court. Now, it has to be said that Christopher Crone revealed an email that was sent by Tony Condotti, the Galagly's boss, that's the city attorney, the main city attorney, the official head cheese city attorney in Santa Cruz, who was also in court but didn't argue the case. It was Reed Galagly who argued this case and then used this phrase, drug lover. What Condotti wrote to the city council was this. Dated April 29th, the day of the court hearing, the last part of the court hearing where Reed Galagly made this irrelevant and inflammatory and defamatory statement toward Drew Glover. He said, and the email was addressed to Martine Watkins, the mayor, Justin Cummings, the vice mayor, and council members Myers, Matthews, Brown, Crone, and Glover. And the subject was Quintero versus the city, and that's the name of this lawsuit. Desiree Quintero at the Ross Camp was the lead plaintiff. Following up on my prior message, Condotti writes, this morning during cross-examination, my associate, and doesn't give his name notice, took an unnecessary swipe at council member Glover, referring to the fact that he apparently spelled his name D-R-U as a teenager. It was an ad hominem remark that had no direct bearing on the issues in the case and was not discussed with me in advance. I'm innocent, except this guy is the lead attorney in this case, so why the hell isn't he being fired, is my interjection. Anyway, Condotti continues, so on behalf of myself and my office, I would like to apologize to Councilmember Glover. I'm truly sorry it happened. Best, Tony. Why isn't Galagly, I can never quite get his name right, apologizing himself? My only experience, well, I probably had a couple of experiences with him, but the one that stands out in my memory for him, and I've talked about it on the air, I suspect, is when I was going in for heart surgery 2 years ago, I was fighting a court case and needed to do discovery. He insisted on dragging me into court in spite of a doctor's recommendation that I had a heart problem. He insisted I get a second recommendation, or that I get a very specific excuse from the doctor for not appearing in court. And this was a minor case. We're talking about an infraction. This was a ticket for being at City Hall as we fought for the rights of people with the Freedom Sleeper Movement, where they tried to give us, they gave us citations for being on the city council grounds at night peacefully with our signs and literature. You see, that's now a crime in Santa Cruz, in case you've not been aware of that. You're not allowed to be at City Hall after 6 o'clock at night. That's criminal behavior. Is that because there have been Molotov cocktails threatened? Is that because there's been massive vandalism? Is that because... No. It's just because it was a decision made by the head of Parks and Rec at that time that they just decided they would declare it out of bounds. And essentially, Parks and Rec's decision was under the thumb and the authority of Martin Bernal, the city attorney. Anyway, Galagly is still the city assistant city attorney, still parades around in his expensive-looking suit, and is still getting away with this kind of stuff. And he isn't even named in here as a person who attempted to smear a council member ideologically by using this ridiculous Drew Glover, drug lover stuff. Continuing with the flyer, it's also true that Galagly ignored the threat of solitary camping for vulnerable women. A number of women testified at the camp that they felt much safer in the camp for the 6 months they were there than they had before the camp, but they were afraid of facing hostility both from Take Back Santa Cruz trollish types and from police outside and just from various unknown people, because they could no longer have a community of people protecting them as they do in the camp. And I interviewed numerous women who told me the same thing. I presented those declarations to Anthony Prince. However, he either didn't have the time or he felt they were not part of his legal strategy. That's unfortunate. But he didn't present them. And I concluded my flyer by saying the city camp crushers also denied that the city had any requirement to provide alternate shelter under the Boise versus Martin federal court decision of last fall, which was don't cite one person for camping or sleeping unless you have shelter for all. And it wasn't just about camping or sleeping. It was about items that, actions that homeless people cannot avoid. And those are the kinds of things that the Santa Cruz Police Department is doing when it cites people for trespassing and sleeping at night on public property when they have no legal place to go. We won one, we lost one, but the struggle continues, said the uprooted residents. We will find another campground, and if we have to, another one after that. And that's certainly going to be the case for people individually. I kind of doubt it's going to be the case for campers, I may have said this already, who are, we had hoped would stay together as a group, some of us, because it's easier to keep the court case going that way, and it's also easier for the community to provide support that way. And who knows, maybe folks will come together, maybe the community itself will set up a campsite and invite people to come there and just take matters into their own hands instead of waiting around pathetically for the city to take action, which is what is apparently the current recipe for disaster that is used. It's one of the great objections I have with Brent Adams' approach, which is the idea that he can just coax the city into being reasonable. I just don't think that happens without pressure. And hopefully the pressure will continue. And now what I'm going to do is play Anthony Prince's speech that he gave and the comments from various plaintiffs at the press conference they held after the TRO was lifted in San Jose about 5:30 or 6 in front of the federal courthouse. Anthony Prince talking to the news media, as they like to call themselves.
Not necessarily one within the legal context, because the next step is to continue the organization. The next step here is discouraged. No one here is walking out shedding tears, and that's because for almost a solid week we pushed back homeless pro se plaintiffs, assisted by attorney, but homeless pro se plaintiffs filed 4 consecutive motions and a summons and complaint against the city of Santa Cruz. We had a temporary restraining order that lasted for almost a week. I don't think that's ever happened in Santa Cruz. A group of homeless people were able to restrain the city for one solid week. We're disappointed in the court's decision. We move on. We're in the ring. We're not getting out of the ring. We think that I'll tell you now that I'm a little disappointed that the I feel that the court I will evaluate the record, but it seems to me that we put on solid evidence. We had many declarations, and unfortunately, we were unable to convince the court that there's going to be a harm to people. I would say that the city of Santa Cruz needs to be very careful as they move forward to take the camp down. They promised and they said repeatedly in open court that they have alternative shelter for every single person who's going to be displaced from the camp. We'll see if that actually happens. We're about a union movement. We're about a homeless union movement. And we know how to give a punch. We know how to take a punch and keep on fighting. So our response is to continue to organize. We are at the beginning of something here. This is happening all across the country. And everyone in the country is paying attention to what's happening in Santa Cruz and is inspired by all these people back here who came out of a homeless encampment to challenge the city of Santa Cruz in federal district court. And so we're going to continue. As I indicated to the judge, I am inclined towards filing an appeal in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. I have not made that decision. I will not make that decision without consulting with all of my fellow colleagues here at pro se plaintiffs, but we will be undertaking those discussions, carefully reviewing the record in this case. But I will say, quite frankly, that I'm inclined towards that because I feel that the the elements that need to be shown in order for a temporary restraining order to remain in effect, I believe we showed them. We showed them in spades, in my opinion. So reviewing courts are there. When lower courts make a mistake, there are courts of appeal, so we'll be looking at that. But I'll just finish with this. I think that we are about building something here. We have a real core. I've been informed that people throughout the Santa Cruz community have been coming up to plaintiffs and others saying, man, we love what you're doing. You're standing up. We have homeowners. We have property owners siding with us on this. And I'll say this. Anyone can be in the position of becoming homeless. And I would advise the people, I see you nodding your head because you know it's true, that if you saw the government shutdown of a few weeks ago, a couple of months ago, see how close people were. They were in the bread lines. They were in the soup lines. They went on YouTube to plea for people to help pay the rent. That's how close, and those were civil service federal employees, this close to becoming homeless. It could happen to anyone. The people of Santa Cruz has to ask themselves, do you want to be treated if that happens to you? If you have a family emergency such that all your money's gone and you end up unable to pay the rent and without a place to live, do you want the city of Santa Cruz to treat you in the way that they've treated homeless people here? That's what people need to think about. Our fight is not as far from over. We go back, we continue to organize, and get ready for the next round.
Yes.
So I'll let, and I think it's just important for you to listen to, especially those from the Ross camp, Santos, and go ahead, come on, introduce yourself and say a few things about how you feel.
I'm Maggie.
Say your first and last name, please.
I'm Maggie Rochelle.
Spell the last name, Maggie.
R-O-C-H-E-L-L-E.
And you're a Ross camp?
Yes. I came to Santa Cruz from Texas searching for my son, who I had not heard from for 3 years. Very unusual for him. I knew he was in trouble. I searched and searched and searched. I narrowed it down to Santa Cruz, and if he had been scattered in the woods somewhere, I would never have found him. But he was at the Ross camp. I did find him. I've been here for 4 months now. My son is doing much better. I've gotten to know many, many people at the camp. They have been uniformly respectful, kind, generous, lovely people, most of whom have suffered some sort of personal, financial, terrible trauma. And my son is in trouble, but he's going to get better. And he's fortunate to have a mother that will travel across the country and be willing to stay at the camp and, you know, loves everybody there and, you know, I mean, we're all in this together. I guess that's the bottom line.
Okay. Did you say your first last name?
Santos Mendez. I was born and raised in Santa Cruz. My name's Santos Mendez. I was born and raised in Santa Cruz. The reason I'm homeless is because of the choices that I made. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get my life back together so that way I can go back to school, you know, be successful again. You know, I did have a real job and I did have hope, but the choices that I've made, like I said, you know, they were bad choices, but I'm trying to get my life better back together, so.
So where are you going to go now that the camp's going to be closed?
Well, there's some of us that have, we're going to move to another spot, you know, that's what we got to do. We just got to be a little bit more resourceful. We got to be more, you know, help each other out a little bit more better.
Will it be a city?
We're going to try to do that, yeah.
We can't,
we haven't decided where we're going to be, but we're, you know, it's going to be a spot where it's going to be safe for everybody. You know, nobody's going to have any thing to worry about. They're going to be able to walk around and be okay with themselves.
Are both of you on the plaintiffs?
No, they're plaintiffs.
Yep.
Both of you.
Hi, I'm Crystal Olson, O-L-S-S-O-N, and I just wanted to say that this is just the beginning. We are going to fight. Look at what happened with slavery, you know, and look at where we are now with that. So this is just the beginning, people.
Alicia.
I just want to reiterate what Crystal said. This is only the beginning. As long as the city of Santa Cruz continues to be dishonest and misrepresent the amount of shelter space they have, and as long as they continue to criminalize the homeless, and I don't just mean with camping tickets, I mean with trespass tickets, harassment, as long as those type of things continue to the homeless in Santa Cruz, we're going to keep fighting. We have put together quite a force now, and we're not going to stop until we get some dignity and respect. And all I can really say is we've only just begun.
Can you say your first and last name, please?
Alicia Kuhl, A-L-I-C-I-A-K-U-H-L.
Are you one of the plaintiffs, or?
I am an organizational plaintiff, and I am the Ross Camp liaison, and I'm going to be the next camp liaison.
Anyone else? Just one thing you guys should know. One thing you guys should know is that, Keith, do you want to say something?
Yeah, I
should. Okay, let Keith talk.
Go ahead. This is Keith.
So, two basic things is it's clear that there will be, that the Ross Camp people will be living outside in the next couple of days, no matter what the situation is, because the city definitely did not offer any possible place for people to really stay for any given amount of time, like 5 days, now it's 3 days, and then at the most a handful of people will get to stay at 1220 for 2 months. And so in the end, you're going to see people living all over the streets again. At the same token, the Union of the Homeless and groups like Food Not Bombs will work in solidarity to set up new camps. So, of course, I think we've come to the agreement that the next camp will be called Heroes Camp, and that it'll be in the city limits, it'll be self-managed, and it'll be organized with forethought, contrary to how Ross Camp developed, and that we will see that we are the people that are going to be providing safe accommodations and sleeping place for people to sleep, and that that's actually going to be a community effort as opposed to a city effort, and that we're sadly going to see the failure of the city's plan. It'd be wonderful if they really housed everybody. I think everybody would love that.
That's great.
But that's not even possible according to what Susie O'Hare said. She offered actually no information about resolving this crisis. It was just some promises, and we've seen those are the same promises that we've had over the years that have resulted in the current situation of there being hundreds of people needing a place to live.
One thing I want to clarify is that this was an effort on our part to get the judge to freeze everything in place to maintain the status quo while we proceeded with our federal civil rights lawsuit. He elected to dissolve the TRO that was in effect for almost a week. However, the underlying federal civil rights lawsuit goes forward. We have made a jury demand in this case, and ultimately it will be a jury that will decide whether the city of Santa Cruz has violated the constitutional rights of poor and homeless people, and we believe that they have. And unfortunately, we believe that they will continue to violate those rights. So sometimes people don't understand that this decision here does not end it. This is only a temporary setback for us, and we intend to go forward and aggressively pursue this case all the way. So with that, I want to thank everyone in the media for coming out and covering. We hope that you guys will continue to tell the true story, not just one side, but both sides, and you guys were present in court and heard some of the testimony. You heard all the testimony, didn't you? And so that testimony, I think, was compelling, and hopefully we'll have some good stories. We're available to provide more information, and thanks so much.
Ms. Prince, what's your phone number? Do you have a card?
No, my phone number.
Back a day to the Sunday before the Monday of that press conference.
So it's a sunny day here, April 28th. Still the temporary no parking A-frames are up all day from 423 to 424, blocking parking along the right side for about 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, about 16 or 18 spaces. And there's
There's one car parked here anyway, which is good because it's only dated.
And this is a commentary observation about many parking spaces being sort of kept out of public use. The ones closest to the Ross camp, which has housed a police substation, I think 3 days a week, this long police vehicle, or trailer, if you will. But it was actually happening the same A-frame, no parking was out there, no parking signs were out there again today on May 2nd when I went out there to the Ross camp the day before the demolition. Although the signs on the of these A-frames said April 23rd, April 24th, no parking. No one has bothered to take them down or even to change them. And I guess one wag began removing them and putting them off to the side. And other people began parking there. So that seemed like a good thing to me. But back to April 28th.
Wild, crazy. Why would they be blocking things off? It's pretty quiet at the campground. We have 3, 6, 8 trash cans full back again. And also 4 hand washing stations and looks like 8 porta potties.
And what we're talking about here is that there was a time during the court hearing when the city pulled out many of the porta-potties and the hand-washing stations. And this alarmed one of the plaintiffs, a person who lives in Ross Camp, Mike Sweat, who actually left the court and went back because he was afraid his possessions were going to be taken. The city attorney, Galagly, admitted that this had been a screw-up, as he put it, and that at this point the facilities were returned. But, of course, as of tomorrow, there will be no more facilities there, and there will be no more facilities for those hundreds of people who are being essentially dumped out into the community without any accommodations. And so if you wonder what that smell is in the air in that particular alley, it has to do with the fact that facilities no longer being available that were available for the last 6 months.
Man, plus 3 of them. Two disabled, actually. Pretty good.
Daniel and his pooch. Oh, Nymeria.
And you say you just read this fine flyer that I wrote and you thought it was okay?
I think it's perfect because we don't hear anything about what's going to happen after we do leave, or there's definitely not enough spaces for everybody that's here. And, there's a lot of women here. Everybody here is safe.
How long have you been here?
Pretty much since it started.
And have you had any conversations with Susie O'Hara or Megan Bunch or anybody from the city, those two coming?
Yeah.
What have they said to you?
I can't really remember. I pretty much just listened to what they were talking about.
Were you reassured by anything they said?
Not really. No. Yeah, please.
So what are you going to do if the camp is dispersed? What do you think your tentative thought is? It's hard to figure out a plan when you don't know what the hell is going on. I would find it hard.
But I've been trying to think of an alternative plan, and it hasn't really come up yet, so I don't really know. I'd probably just start camping out around the beach again and getting harassed by the cops, and pretty much open to whatever kind of threats are out there, which are a lot.
What do you think about the idea
for the women around here? It's a tight community where everybody's kind of watched, and I was actually surprised on how long this community's existed here with the lack of fights and ODs, and there's been no trouble, really. Everyone gets along pretty well.
Now, somebody was telling me that this everyone here uses drugs, that this camp is organized around drug sales, and that this is people feel been forcibly injected with drugs. Have you seen any of that?
I've seen no enforcerly ejected with anything. I believe Santa Cruz itself is infused with drugs. I mean, almost every popular like singer that ODs gets their drugs from Santa Cruz.
Really? That's true.
Pretty much. Like, yeah. Jerry got his drugs from here. And Bradley Noel got his drugs from here.
It's a thriving industry.
A thriving thing in Santa Cruz. And
more so here than elsewhere in Santa Cruz, what would you say?
No. No, that's just blaming it on poverty. I mean, we're all so poor, we can't afford the amount of drugs that most people are buying to make Santa Cruz the drug capital of California per capita.
How many folks would you say you know personally in the camp?
I don't know. I don't know. I try to keep myself to myself, but I'd say probably half of them.
And would you say what percentage are regular hard drug users, if you could venture a guess?
I don't know, probably 50%.
Okay. How much does that interfere with their day-to-day functioning?
I mean, how much does being a drug addict interfere with your day-to-day function?
I don't know.
It turns into your day-to-day function.
So you find it pretty much takes up the 50% of their lives.
Yeah.
Any message you would have for the general community about folks living here and what you would hope from the community and what you're thinking about this current court case, which, as you know, has stopped the city from dispersing the camp?
As of now, we're all in one spot, and you disperse us, we'll be everywhere.
Where were you before this? Where you were said the beaches, you mentioned?
Pretty much sleeping on the beaches or in parks, getting out of park, kicked out of parking lots or, you know.
Are you likely to go to the Poganip, to the parks? Do you have any sense of that?
I have no idea, really.
And the other thing is, some have suggested it's good for a core group of the camp to stay together wherever they go. And then if the police move them, then just move to another place. What do you think of that idea?
It's a good idea. Nobody ever messes with a hive. They always just pluck off the individual bees.
Buzz, buzz. Yeah. We've been talking with?
Daniel.
Anything you want to add, Daniel?
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Broken down and tired of living life on the merry-go-round, and you can't find a fighter, but I see it in you, so we gon' walk it out. Ooh, mountains, we gon' walk it out, and ooh, we have each other. And for that we have each other. I will rise a thousand times again.
That was Andra Day, Rise Up, with a video about her taking care of a guy in a wheelchair, apparently with some kind of brain disorder. Nice song. People came to the hearing in San Jose on Monday. One of them was Wes White, and we grabbed him at the Jack in the Box and interviewed him.
So it's April 29th, about 12:30. We're here in the San Jose Jack in the Box talking with
Wes White.
And Wes, you just sat through 2 hours of proceedings in Judge Davila's court. Do you have any comments on that? Okay. Well, you know, I appreciated Keith McHenry's testimony pretty good. I think they tried to squelch him from being able to talk about imminent harm of what happens to people if they get split out of the camp, you know, because a lot of people do have very small circles of habit or, you know, routine, and it does make it harder if you have to relocate. How do you get back at it?
Now, this was, of course, the witnesses called were by Attorney Anthony Prince, who's an advocate for the California Homeless Union, and who's been asking questions of witnesses on the basis of his organizational ties with the lawsuit, since he is one of the organizations represented. Looks like he'll probably be the only organizational person to be asking questions at this hearing. Keith McHenry, of course, is also the head of another organization, Food Not Bombs, and he was testifying that they provide food at Ross Camp and that if Ross Camp is dispersed, and it took a while for this testimony to actually get to it, that the problem would be not so much that there isn't a place where they can go and get food on Saturdays and Sundays, but that there will be a transportation problem both for those days and also for the rest of the time, because there's no place that food could be delivered in one particular spot. Although one individual in our conference a few minutes ago suggested that the judge was biased and actually trying to lead the witness in favor of the prosecution to indicate that there wasn't any food problem. What's your sense about that?
Oh, man. Well, I did get the feeling that he was just like, well, but they can go anywhere. You're going to be around the whole time, so, you know, they're guaranteed to be able to see it again. You'll be there indefinitely, correct? But there again, the proximity of place, you know, like I said, the routines, you know, when people can do things, just establishing a routine, I think, is hard enough. And, you know, the people are already there. That actually is why it became a resource of a stop to be there to begin with.
Now, this led at least one individual to suggest that the case should be appealed because the judge was actually acting, going beyond the scope of his attempt to just simply clarify and get information, actually presenting evidence for the prosecution. As an experienced legal hand at this, what do you think?
All right, I'm going to let that one ride.
So now we jump back to the April 23rd council meeting, the actually last council meeting that, well, that was the last council meeting. Another one is coming up on May 14th, as mentioned before. And outside the council meeting, since I'm not going to bother to play for you inside the council meeting, though some of the discussion was interesting, you can find it, however, online at the council website, or the city's website under Santa Cruz City Council. This, of course, was the council meeting where Councilmember Cummings essentially moved to close the Ross Camp, and that is what is going to be happening tomorrow. If you want to know who's to blame for that, it is Cummings, because he is the fourth vote. He's the man who essentially made that decision. Angering to some of us because he was elected on what seemed to be a different platform, though I guess there was a Ross Camp when he was running, and the issue didn't really come up per se during the election campaign, but it was the homeless issue was there. Anyway, here's discussion outside the council meeting by the large crowd that was essentially there. It was before the actual vote on the homeless issue, which happened in the afternoon.
Currently being interviewed by...
What is your biggest concern regarding homelessness?
Biggest concern regarding homelessness in Santa Cruz. I've always been sort of focused on the criminalization of homeless people, you know, tickets they get, the less than first class status they have, the most difficulties they have doing the most basic things, not so much because of a lack of services, because of the denial of ordinary services and humanship to them. And there's a whole structure of laws in Santa Cruz, the most famous of which is the sleeping ban, but there are all kinds of other ones, like there's a sitting ban, there's a spare changing ban, there's a you can't sit on a bench for more than an hour regulation, there's a law here at City Hall, you can't be here after 6 o'clock at night. If you're even peacefully protesting, you're sitting on a bench with a sign. So a whole bunch of laws that have been designed to either criminalize homeless people, give the police vast powers to do that, or make it difficult for people to engage in peaceful protest about these same issues. Does that answer your question?
And if you could ask Councilmember Glover any questions, what would you ask?
When are you going to move to fire the city manager?
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I can take that from you. And would you mind signing a release form real quick?
No, that's fine. Sure.
Here in the break.
And we're waiting for the city council to return from its closed session, where a motion to go into closed session, opposed by Drew Glover, supported by everyone else, and actually pushed by Justin Cummings, was taken in the midst of another motion by Councilmember Glover to allow for voluntary repatriation to the Benchlands campground, and also but no action on anything until after the court decision, also considering having the Association of Faith Communities run a reduced campground at Ross, and that was pulled back. We're listening to two non-council members discuss the issue.
Yeah, we are superseding all council members out of dire necessity. We feel that even the best of them are out of their depth in these matters and proceedings. Some of them are trying.
More interesting would be what you're actually talking about, not the latest improvisation for comic effect.
Yeah, okay.
What were you saying before?
Well, I'm saying Chris Crone played a good, strong role. He is standing by basic principles and reminding us that the UN Declaration of Human Rights Universal Declaration of should be the basis for all actions by governments and communities. And he's right about that. That's a much better basis from which to act than all these legalisms and mires of morality that they get into here. And you've been here so long, Robert, and seen it over and over. I'm sitting watching the back of your head with your beautiful silver locks, and I'm saying to myself, this poor man, he's seen this over and over, and it's identical every time. There are some slight differences. And I think Drew is trying to lay down a Martin Luther King. He made a big speech today, a major speech, in which he laid out the moral principles of not being cruel to suffering human beings, basically. And it's good that he did that, because it's on the historical record, at least locally.
It's kind of hard to say, to oppose such a set of principles. The real issue is what you do to implement them locally. And that's really the problem with the city council.
Well, that's why this is a good move that the progressives are calling for. This working group or committee, whatever it does, they want it to be democratic and inclusive, so that we help design the program.
Why do we need a fucking working committee? That was done 20 years ago.
No, but this is to design actual programs that would establish camps and shelters.
They continue doing the same thing with this. You're talking about the homelessness committee, right?
I guess that's what it's called.
A bunch of people who get together and jabber for another half year. I'm sorry.
I hope not. I hope it will.
Were you here in the 2000? I mean, didn't you see that happen?
I'm not assuming that it will be a repeat. I'm not assuming.
Why wouldn't you assume that? I mean, you know, because the proposals are already here.
I think now there are enough people of intelligence and purpose and experience who would like to work together to set up a realistic solution or program. That's my hope. I'm only expressing
hope. I think they would have said the same thing 20 years ago and the same thing 40 years ago. So what?
Well, you're the cynic. I'm not a cynic.
It's not that I'm a cynic. I was there and I saw it happened, here observing today the council meeting. We have a different perspective.
But I want to raise another important thing. You could probably answer this legal question. Isn't it true the city council just went into
closed session?
I thought there was no real basis for doing that.
I didn't either in the city. Well, let me put it this way. It looked like an attempt to derail Drew Glover's motion that he made right before they did it. And it was done by Justin Cummings. It looks to me like it's this, an attempt of there's some sort of rivalry between the two, because you may remember Cummings was going to he pressed this motion to close Ross Camp. That was his motion. He and Watkins wanted to close Ross Camp permanently, even though there's inadequate shelter.
Yeah.
We talked to him for 3 hours last night about that in the Saturn Cafe.
Oh, boy.
And his only response was, he was friendly. He said, well, the county is making us do it or they won't give us the money for the 1220 River Street. That's number one. And number two, we're going to hold the staff accountable if they don't have enough beds. And I said, what about the homeless people who are scattered all over the streets? Well, we're really hoping that won't happen. It's the kind of thing that Susie O'Hara says, which is, our intention is to do this and this and this. But you see, it's clear that's insincere, because the question that Chris Krohn asked her was, what are your resources? Actually, it was Drew Glover. What are your resources? How many beds do you have? And eventually she gave that answer, but she didn't point out that those are beds which have to be shared with 1,000 homeless people outside.
Right. She always gives these statistics in a very misleading way, Ms. O'Hara. I've noticed that.
I
don't know if that's intentional. I think it's kind of brushing over the shortage all the time.
Well, I think she wants to support the city manager's position.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She is an assistant city manager.
Yeah, none of these people are autonomous. They're all part of a smooth operations machine. Thank you, Robert.
Will you be coming to the Conscience in Action meeting tomorrow at 11?
Yeah.
All right, we'll see you there. Talking with
Alicia Gould.
Alicia, are you saddened by this recent decision?
Oh, no, I'm ecstatic.
What has made you so happy?
Well, we got a temporary restraining order against the city from doing any action on the Ross Camp until it can be heard on Friday by the federal judge Davila at 9 a.m. in federal court in San Jose.
And what do you, is there any more to the order than that, or was that pretty much it?
I will have to take a look at the order, but it is my understanding and based on Mr. Condotti's statement that they will not be able to do any action on the Ross camp until our case is heard Friday morning at 9.
You went over to San Jose this morning.
I did.
And what was your purpose there?
My purpose there was to file a motion. It was a supplemental attachment to our previous complaint, and it was to show imminence. Based on what happened yesterday, it was to show that we are really requesting an immediate decision based on a TRO, based on what happened yesterday. We don't have time to waste. They were going to disband the camp completely tomorrow by 4 p.m., and so we needed to let the judge know that it's of utmost importance that we get an immediate decision.
Anything happen over in San Jose that you found of interest? Or was it sort of a routine filing?
It took me 30 seconds to file it. Betty at the courthouse there is really, really nice.
And you've been listening and sitting to most of this city council meeting. What have you heard so far that struck you most strikingly?
Well, it was the same old shit show. It started out not really caring about people, different ways to get around, the fact that we have no available shelter beds, a whole bunch of lies, and basically everybody was going to vote. In speculation, I think, at least a majority of the vote was about to close the Ross camp, and we have essentially at least temporarily derailed that from happening.
Any particular comments by any council members that you found noteworthy?
Of course. I always would like to say that Drew is very supportive of the homeless population here. He meets with us. I like the fact that empathy was discussed, dignity, treating people like people. We need to stop calling the people over there campers. We can either refer to them as residents or people. We need to start treating people with more respect. We definitely need a moral revival around here, and that there's at least a couple of our city council members that know that and some that don't.
We have another immoral individual here from the tenants union.
I don't want to interrupt that.
No, you.
You're next.
I didn't have that much to say.
What's your name?
Hi, my name's Cynthia Berger.
Cynthia, what's your neck of the woods here?
I'm a tenant activist, tenant organizer, tenant advocate.
And we see that tenant organizing is, well, how is it in Santa Cruz these days, as if I didn't know?
Tenant organizing is very interesting point right now because there's a lot of, there are a lot of bills in the California legislature for new tenant protections, and that's because advocates have succeeded in getting through to legislators, and that means that whoever's supporting those advocates, you know, that's a growing group. So I feel that tenants are starting to become, have an identity as a voting body. And
more so than last year?
Yes, I think they are going to feel that it's absolutely necessary pretty soon, because most tenants are going to be either homeless or for part of the year in the next few years. So they're gonna see the great organizing that the homeless people are doing, I think. And you know, for me, it's all one population, I'd say.
Will we be seeing you at the next Conscience in Action Huff meeting?
I don't know. I have, you know, my own agenda and things that I have to do to make money and stuff, so I'm definitely not going to a lot of meetings because I don't find that is helping me to organize any tenants here. But I do like to know what's going on and, you know, gather feedback from folks. And, you know, if people have any input about how to organize tenants, I'm always open to that.
Well, we are facing a wealth of information about tenant organizing over there at the Huff area.
Right. So there needs to be more cross-pollination. And, in fact, there should be some homeless folks. And I did see a homeless person, which, you know, an unhoused person, attending one of the tenant council counselor training, so it was really great to see. The guy with the pirate hat, I forget his name.
Pirate, also known as Mark, perhaps?
No, he's got another name. But at any rate,
sure.
So that would be great to see more cross-pollination like that, because it's an artificially divided and conquered group. And now people are realizing that they thought that they were stably housed, and so many people are realizing that they are not, their housing is not stable by any means, and their wages are so low that they could easily be out on the street when they're old people. And so it's a good time for them to get together.
Anything coming up around the tenants organizing groups or workshops?
What there is the city did fund a group of us, which I was on the organizing committee for the group, and it's called Tenant Sanctuary, and it's going to provide basically what I've been doing for the past 5 years is people will call me and I will counsel them. And
you're going to get paid for this, actually?
I'm not, and I'm going to be an employee of Tenant Sanctuary. I'm just an advisory.
And someone will be paid?
Well, there's $30,000, and some of that will go to pay, you know, a coordinator. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
A tenant, perhaps.
Yeah, oh, yeah. We have a great one, actually. You know, we'll have to see. I'm not sure what the process is.
Well, I think I saw one of your flyers, and there was some sort of meeting coming up, or maybe I missed it, for a sanctuary training.
Sanctuary is having regular trainings, and the best way to find out about them is to go to their Facebook page. It's the only Tenant Sanctuary on Facebook. So just type in Tenant Sanctuary, and if there's an upcoming training, the date will be there, and soon the office will be open certain days of the week, and like a weekday evening. I'll be working on Thursdays from 2:30 on till about 8, starting soon. I'm pretty experienced, and then there's other newer counselors, but they all have access to more experienced counselors. So fortunately, the city didn't give us enough money to actually offer legal representation and hire a lawyer, but we can put people in touch with tenant lawyers for free consultations.
Anything you want to add?
No.
And we've been talking with
Cynthia Berger from Santa Cruz Tenants Association. You can, the Hot Tenants Rights Hotline is 831-222-0359, 831-222-0359, and you can always find my website if you just type in Santa Cruz Tenants Rights.
Thanks, Cynthia.
Thanks, Robert.
Speaking with
Pat Malo.
And Pat, you and I and a bunch of other folks were outside waiting for the closed session to get back into open session, but you're here for another item.
Yeah, I'm here, two birds with one stone or whatever, here to support the homeless issues, and then also we've got cannabis issues coming up sometime whenever this is done, and those are the biggest of those issues for me is the tax rate reduction, because basically in this new experiment called regulated cannabis, few of the old actors have been able to pass through, and the ones that remain have had to, take on money to be able to make the next steps. And
so if you were to contrast the cannabis retail scene 3 years ago in Santa Cruz, and then even in the county, and I know we'll be talking more medical than recreational, but how has it changed?
Well, and so the retail is a lot of the same actors, which is, another issue. I don't think the retail thing over the last 5 years has really been open and representative of the old Prop 215 system. But if you include cultivators and all the other small businesses in this, statewide we've seen 95 to 99% of those old legal medical businesses not being able to transfer into this new regulated system. Locally, we've got, you know, probably similar numbers. You know, some folks...
What are the percentages again?
I was 95% of folks who had, of the, you know, tens of thousands of small medical cannabis businesses that were obeying the old Prop 215, SB 420 set of rules, they, the amount of them who's been able to get into this new state licensing system is probably 5% at most.
Now,
but
was this one of the reasons you opposed the, or did you oppose?
Yeah, I opposed Prop 64, another organization, community or Cannabis Advocates Alliance that was organizing. You know, years ago, we ran an ad in the Good Times saying California deserves better about Prop 260 or Prop 64. You know, 215 wasn't perfect or anything like that, but it was, you know, a much more inclusive system. This 64 was written by, you know, millionaires for a billionaire, and you basically have to be a millionaire or a billionaire to be involved in cannabis at this point.
And have millionaires and billionaires profited by this?
Well, it's profited is a hard thing to say because, you know, one of the realities of today is because of the high taxation, the cost of these licenses, and the, like, cost of compliance, is that most businesses in cannabis are operating the way that, say, Amazon or other startups will operate, is that they're not technically making profits. They're building portfolios to take on new funding rounds. And so most of what's out there is large, you know, speculative investors who are pouring into cannabis because they see it as this next big thing. And most businesses out there are either, you know, looking for that capital to be able to make the steps or looking to sell to those folks because no one is making money in cannabis, in legal cannabis anymore, or illegal for that matter.
What's the impact on poor people who are in need of cannabis?
Well, so, you know, there's some specific things of where this new regulated system, even giving cannabis away by a licensed cannabis business to a medical patient, you still have to pay state excise taxes and you know, other.
Cut you off because it looks like council is resuming.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We're talking with
Altera Hatton.
And you've been at most of this meeting, if not all of it?
I have been at all of the meetings, yes.
And what led you to come to this particular meeting?
A number of volunteers and myself have been serving lunch to Ross Camp on Saturdays over the last 9 weeks, and have got to know the people who are living there and have some idea of the concerns that they have. And I really wanted to make sure that they were well-voiced today.
And how often have you gone out to Ross Camp?
Weekly for about 10 weeks and maybe once or twice a week each week.
And this may be a challenge for you because you're in a wheelchair.
I am. I'm in a power chair and it has been a challenge. At various points it was very muddy and there was a difficult time getting through. I think the recent cleanup made a huge difference and I'm hoping to see future cleanups as well. So.
And of course, have you been assaulted by madmen with hypodermic needles?
No. I'm laughing because it's so far from that I can't tell you. So the first time we served lunch, I thought I was just being a neighborly thing. I didn't think I was going to keep doing it. So my wife and I showed up with 27 boxes of macaroni and cheese, and we had trouble carrying them up that rather steep path from the gateway parking lot. And people rushed to help us set up our tables, help us serve food, help us clean up afterwards, thanked us for being there. And I see an amazing community there of people I'd be honored to call friends.
And will you be going out there again?
Yes, this afternoon.
And is this, does your group have a name, or are you just an independent group, or are you just a bunch of ne'er-do-wells?
We're neighbors who care. Many of us are professionals. We cook typically on Friday night. We give away food just to people on an individual basis. We're not like a professional kitchen or a professional organization. We're not a church. We're just neighbors.
Have you had any discussions with any of the city council about their plans for Ross Camp?
Here and there. And I think that they all want to see something better. I think there's a lack of good choices available. I think there's a lot of goodwill and a lot of good intention. And I think that given their position as part-time city council members with huge workloads, coming up with something that works for everyone is very difficult. I think as a community, we have to figure out partnerships and solutions that we can offer to them and make those realities come true.
Now, as a
As a person in a wheelchair wheeling your way into that camp, did you find anybody else who lives there who is differently abled, as one might say?
I don't know if you've read the Point in Time report, but 65% of homeless in Santa Cruz, according to the ARS survey, have a physical disability. And at Ross Camp, I would say it's even higher. I think it's closer to 80%. There are people in wheelchairs, there are people using walkers, there are people with a multitude of disabling conditions there, and it's heartbreaking.
Now, what were you hoping for out of this city council meeting today?
I was hoping for a humane solution that didn't re-traumatize people who have been traumatized since they lost their housing. And I've seen that. I've seen our city council members work very hard towards that solution.
Well, of course, the solution proposed by Cummings and Watkins was kill the Ross camp, send them all over for 7 days to San Lorenzo, and then dump them wherever we can. That's my view of it. But did you favor that? Not necessarily the way I put it, but the resolution that the Watkins and Cummings proposed.
Yeah, I definitely see that resolution differently, so I'm thinking of how to word this. Give me a moment. I see people working very hard to try to improve a situation, and, you know, one of the biggest issues that we have is funding. And so if you want to know why we're in this situation and how things are going to proceed, you always have to follow the money, right? And so in this situation, I saw people trying to do their best to meet the needs of the financiers, as well as the people that are their constituents and the residents of their city. And I'm glad to see that it didn't go forward as planned, obviously.
Uh-huh.
But I also see that there are many hard choices ahead of us, and I'm not sure which ones are going to go forward. So fingers crossed everyone follows their heart when they vote.
We still have a camp to go out to. When are you going out next Friday, you said?
We'll be out there this Saturday, and I'll stop by this afternoon if they need water.
You may or may not have a camp on the Saturday, depending on what the TRO decision is and what the city council decides when it comes back from the closed session. What do you think of that movement into closed session rather than discussion here in an open session?
I have mixed feelings. You know, I work as a mediator, so I'm probably always going to see both sides of things, just to give you a heads up. But, you know, personally, I find it very difficult to have functional and cumulative conversations in their kind of rigid format the city council is set up in. And I think a lot of small questions need to be asked that maybe don't need to be asked in front of the general public. However, I also value democracy, and I feel like we've lost a lot of transparency along the way, and I'm really concerned about losing more transparency. So I see both sides of the situation, unfortunately. Sorry.
So you weren't alarmed when they went into closed session? Although that happened on the heels of Glover's resolution that the Ross Camp be retained as an Association of Faith Communities matter, and also that it be a voluntary transfer rather than an involuntary one. That was quickly stopped by Justin Cummings, and we're off to the closed session.
I have a great deal of faith in the people at City Council. I think a lot of...
Silly girl.
I know. I've been around the block for a while. I've also judged people and their character for a long time. But the interesting thing is about being disabled is that I often have to ask for help from strangers. So I literally get to fall backwards into the arms of people I don't know in order to get down curves and to get down stairways and staircases. So it gives me a really interesting perspective in judging character. We have a number of city council members with excellent character, and I trust their judgment.